protest on Friday, May 24th at 11 a.m. at Gresham City Hall, 1333 Northwest Eastman Parkway in Gresham. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up next on Art Focus, Amanda Clem speaks with Portland-based artist Amy Bay. KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from the Clinton Street Theater, open since 1915, featuring independent films, parties, and community events, located at 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. Full event schedule, tickets, showtimes, and more information is available online at cstpdx.com.
You are now listening to Art Focus on KBOO Community Radio at KBOO 90.7 FM and online at kboo.fm. I'm Amanda Clem, and today we'll be talking with Amy Bay, an artist based here in Portland, Oregon. Amy was born in Elkhart, Indiana, and earned her BFA from the School of the Art Institute of Chicago and an MFA from Winchester School of Art. She has exhibited her work at venues in the Pacific Northwest, including here in Portland at Melanie Flood Projects, Una Gallery, and Snag Gallery, as well as throughout New York City at spaces like Peninsula Art Space, the Painting Center, the Drawing Center, Printed Matter, Brooklyn Public Library, and the Bronx Museum for the Arts. She has shown internationally in group and solo shows and has been awarded grants and projects from the Regional Arts and Culture Council, the Lower East Side Print Shop, Diodone Paper Mill, and Women's Studio Workshop. She currently teaches at Portland Community College and Village Home Education Resource Center and hosts monthly gallery-based discussions through the program you run called Art Hour, which I'm excited to talk with you about later. I think that would be a fun one for everybody to know about. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much for being here, Amy. It's really nice to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
So you are approaching the end of your month-long artist residency through C3 Initiative and Pulp and Decal, which we're like, what is that? And so they're both based right now in North Portland, and C3 Initiative. Can you tell us a little bit about that collaboration and what that residency looks like?
Well, C3 Initiative kind of has their hands in a lot of projects around town. They've worked with a lot of different organizations, and one of their long-standing relationships is with Pulp and Decal, the papermaking studio, run by Jen Woodward. And I believe this is the fifth year of the program. Mm-hmm. And basically, they work together to select four artists and provide instruction and studio support in handmade paper production. It's pretty amazing, actually, the way it's structured. They select four artists. Each artist gets 1 month working with Jen in the studio, and then basically the studio just becomes your studio for the month. She gives you a big chunk of hours of technical support and input and just like helping you get through the residency. So it's pretty great.
Yeah.
We're lucky to have it in town.
Yeah. So the residency, what do we say, established in 2014, and its mission is to engage artists with little or no experience in hand paper making. So this, I assume, to be true for you too. You've never
I do have a little experience with paper making. Yeah. It's not, I took a paper making class in undergrad at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago. They had a really good program, and I was at that time making a lot of books and prints. Mm. So it was kind of a good fit. And then I actually did the Diodone. Diodone is a paper mill in New York City, and in the early aughts, I believe. I did a residency with them, but it was more of a, I mean, it was fantastic, but it was more of a, you make a proposal for a piece, they help you execute the piece. I think I spent maybe a week or two in the studio, and they had everything ready for me, and I just went in and we made the work, right?
So you had a lot of assistance and a lot of hand-holding.
Yeah, but this is more like they really want you to understand what's possible with papermaking. Mm. And it's the kind of thing where you go in with Jen, she shows you how, you know, she shows you all these samples of paper, she shows you how to, the different fibers, and how, gives you a little introduction, You play around with them a bit, and it's a lot of, you know, there's not this pressure to like make a thing. Yeah. In fact, they don't even, in the application, they don't even ask you what you want to make. They ask you all kinds of other questions about what you think about collaboration or, you know, where your work comes from, but they don't really ask for a proper proposal. Okay. So it's really liberating because you know, I went in thinking, okay, I'm going to make, you know, this large scale, you know, do something that I can't do in my own studio, work really large scale, make this big tiled wall covering. I had this whole plan. Yeah. And once you start playing around with the materials and seeing what they do, and, you know, my opinion changed really quickly. And mm-hmm. I thought, oh, okay, I can try a little bit of this and try a little bit of that. And then you really feel this kind of compulsion to try things. You know, you're like, oh, that does that. Ooh, I'll try this, you yes. know. So they're very much open to that open-ended process, which I think is so special. Like, just for Jen to, like, hold that space of me going, you know, spiraling in one direction and then changing my mind and trying something else and trying things that she probably knows might not work or... Oh. But she'll let me, you know, futz around with it a little bit. And it's been really, really good. I love working with her. It's been... pretty great.
That sounds like a really nice, almost like an apprenticeship, but gone yeah. wild. Like,
yeah, she just supports wherever you want to go, she goes. And she'll tell you, obviously, you know, like, it's not like she lets me go down deep mm-hmm. rabbit holes yeah. trying to figure out how something works. But, you know, she gives me a lot of space to figure things out, but also kind of guiding me as we go along. Well, really guiding me as we go along and yeah. telling me what's feasible, what's not, what will take a long time, what won't.
Yeah.
How fibers behave. It's pretty.
Yeah. One thing I learned from looking along on the Instagram from C3 and from you were that the fibers that you were using to make the paper were actually you were using cloth and yeah. things like that. And so that I would love to talk more about that process too. But first I wanted to ask you just what about that residency appealed to you? What made you want to apply for it to begin with as a painter with the background, I think, or, you know, your present work is mostly yeah. on canvas.
Yeah.
And so what compelled you to...
I think I just never really got it out of my craw. You know, it was just something that I actually applied to this residency 4 times.
Oh.
This is my 4th time.
Oh, that was a question I wouldn't
and
even have asked.
And I got it. Yeah. I knew I wanted this, yeah. this residency.
Oh, that's
and
great.
I just kept applying. And I kept telling Jen, I'm just going to keep applying, just so you know. I'm just going to keep applying. And, you know, it's funny because now it feels like it just totally fell into place at the right time for mm-hmm. me. And the organization is like, they really have it together with the residency now. They're very clear about yeah. what they're wanting and how to do it. They've just gotten very good at it, yeah. you know.
In 5 years, you can learn a lot
yeah.
about a program.
Yeah. So, but I think I just really wasn't done with papermaking, you know. I love paper. I just love paper. And I don't get to work with it much because I make oil paintings. You yeah. can't, they don't mix
they don't
so
like
well.
So those two materials.
They can, but not.
Not easily.
No.
Yeah. So, yeah, let's talk about that then, the process. And for me, looking at the work and having seen your more recent show at Melanie Flood Projects, which was including the wall painting installation, those pieces really jump off the canvas. Your paintings are very textural, they're very layered. And then looking at the photos of your process shots from your papermaking residency, those materials also kind of they seemed really kindred in a way that I was not expecting a
yeah.
paper to end up. So
yeah.
how does that process, like, are there different fibers that yeah. you're choosing specifically for these looks?
Yeah, and I didn't even really know what was possible. I knew that you could get them to bulk up. I mean, it's part of why I was curious about them and wanting to do the residency, because I knew you could get different effects with different things. I knew that all the different fibers would behave differently, and you could mess with them a bit and get a kind of rich surface. So, but I had no idea really what you could do. So when they came for the studio visit, I met with Jen and Rory Sparks, another C3 person, one of the people who works at C3. And I was showing them what I was working on, and Jen would say things like, oh, you know, you can pulp that burlap.
Oh, oh.
You know, and I was like, oh, okay, that's actually really exciting. You know? So I think there's just a lot of, it's weird how there are parallels like that between the way you can make paint have body and the way you can make paper have body.
Yeah, that is really,
I mean, I don't think many people know that you can actually like build, like when you build a sheet of paper, when you form a sheet of paper and it's wet, you can alter it in so many different ways. And it's like kind of simultaneously can be the substrate and the image.
Oh, using two different colors, using two different fibers.
Yeah, I mean,
textures,
sometimes I'm just taking all in one pulp and another pulp and smooshing them together on a flat surface, and that's how I'm getting the pieces. Like you, yeah. Like I'm building the sheet as I'm building the image.
Right. So you're painting with the fibers, and in a sense, you're drawing with them.
Yeah, but it's this weird mix of like you paint by not with a paintbrush, but with a like really watered down fiber in a squeezy bottle.
I was gonna say like a pancake batter.
Yes. And so you paint like that, but then I'm also like stenciling and smooshing. It's kind of sculptural in a weird way, or collage-y, where you're just smooshing things together.
Yeah.
But you
be
also
very
can
layered?
Make a sheet. Yeah, it's super, it can get super layered, although the opacity starts to become, and there's not a lot of transparency. That's maybe one of the big differences with oil painting is that you can't really play so much with you can to a degree, but you can't go super crazy with transparency.
No, it'd be too delicate to move or compare to the other parts of it.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like a whole new thing for me. It's not like I'm so used to color being the thing that makes something transparent. Mm. And with paper pulp, it's not the same way. It's like the fiber that makes it transparent or not.
I see, yeah.
So it's a little bit, it's not the same rules that I'm used to.
Yeah. So each paper that you make or are making now, it ends up becoming an image. So are you considering painting over these pieces of paper? Is that part of your process yet?
No, not at all. To me, well, I don't even want to paint on them because I really see the act of painting as happening while I'm forming the sheet.
Yeah. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And sometimes we're actually doing the whole like traditional papermaking thing where you actually form the sheet in a big bath of pulp, mm-hmm. and you couch it onto this surface. And
I think that's
and
the
then
only way I've
painting back into it. So I am doing some of that. Yeah. I am doing some of that. But then I'm also doing all kinds of other weirdo things that are really fun.
Yeah. Can you tell us about some of those weirdo things that you're working on?
Well, I took, and a lot of it is like through the process, like you mess something up and then you realize like, oh, that's actually kind of cool. You know, we took these napkins that I think my mom gave them to me when I went to college like 30 years ago or something. And they were just disgusting, like as of 5 years ago. And a friend of mine insisted that I get new ones, and she got me new ones. And so I had this pile of napkins that I didn't want to get rid of those. So Jen, you know, when we started planning the residency, said, you know, bring in all your cotton stuff. We can recycle these things and make pulp out of them.
Wow.
So I brought them in and we cut them down into tiny like one by one squares and beat them. And at one point I had been using them in other pulp paintings, and then I just thought, well, I'll just make a bunch of little sheets out of them because I don't really know what to do and I have all this extra pulp.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just make a bunch of little sheets and I'll keep them wet so I can keep working with them. And then I had this plan where I was going to maybe put them in other paintings, other pulp paintings, but I just wasn't really clear about what I was going to do with them. And then I just started to try to kind of lay them next to each other, but because they were so thinly formed and kind of fragile, they started doing all this weird wrinkling and flopping, and they looked like fabric again. They looked like napkins again.
Wow.
Like there was this weird kind of transformation where we took them away from fabric, and then now they're paper again, but they look like fabric. So I just kept pushing that, and now I made these sort of, they actually ended up looking like little chenille, remnants or something. I don't know. They're very textile feeling.
Yeah. Fuzzy kind of.
Yeah. Well, you know. they're fabric-y. And then I also put our pulped burlap into the top of them, which is very nubby.
Yeah.
And so they're just weirdos. I don't really know what to say about them yet. but I just formed them together by just smooshing them and piercing, you know, kind of, I don't know how to even explain what I'm doing.
I don't know. It sounds like a very sculptural process.
It is. It's super sculptural. Yeah. It's like, but that's what's so weird about painting with paper is that it's like, it uses all those different parts of your of like my background, you know, like right. like there's a little bit of printmaking in it, there's a little bit of painting in it, there's a little bit of sculpting in it, there's yeah. a little bit of like, I don't know.
Aside from burlap, what's the most unusual or unexpected fiber that you're making paper out of?
That's probably the most unusual one. I'm using pretty traditional fibers, you know, cotton and the abaca. Mm. But the cotton, what's fun about the cotton is that it, you know, you can use old t-shirts, old napkins, those kinds of things. That's been really fun to do. You know, each individual cotton, depending on what it's, how it was, you know, produced, since I'm not working from just pulp, I'm working from t-shirts. And so they've been industrially created, and those are, you know, they all behave a little bit differently.
Yeah. Are there, like the napkins that you had that had to be deaccessioned from regular use, are there any other sentimental objects that you were using to make it?
Well, the t-shirts, like it's like my kids' t-shirts yeah. and, you know, my husband's t-shirts and yeah. yeah, for sure. And it's funny because I didn't even really think so much about the conceptual layers there, mm. you know?
Yeah, I guess in the residency, you're exploring more of the techniques.
Yeah,
and, the process.
And it's the practical decisions that you make. You know, you're wanting to not spend a bunch of money on cotton fiber, which can be really expensive. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the reasons, too, why we worked with t-shirts is that if something is industrially dyed, that the color holds. So I wanted really rich color and really deep. I wanted to get deep blacks and purples and browns and these kinds of things. And you can get that by adding pigment to the raw pulp, but mm-hmm. you have to add a retention aid to keep it from bleeding. And sometimes with certain pulps, you just can't get them to stop doing that. Yeah. And in a way, that's been really fun. I've liked the kind of chaos about that, you know, the
adding pigments.
Yeah, because sometimes you get, you know, this kind of billowing and mixed sort of gets kind of a washy effect
yeah,
that you get.
Watercolor, maybe.
Yeah, and it's a lot of the, like, in my work, I like to have a certain, like, amount of sort of agitation and over-the-top kind of surface.
Yes.
And so that has been another way of doing it, where I get this kind of bleeding of the pigment. Mm-hmm. But then there are certain times when I really want it to stay put. So that's another reason why I chose to work with cotton that yeah. had been repurposed.
Those are all very strategic reasons. But I love it when an artist is explaining their work in a strategic way, but then there's always some, this, you know, the background of your brain is still working very hard on. And the themes in your work are... I just think it's an interesting corollary between the domestic themes in your work and the domesticity of your napkins and your
yeah.
t-shirts becoming these paper paintings,
yeah.
pulp paintings.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And maybe even not just domestic, but just highly personal,
yeah.
you know, highly like sentimental.
Highly sentimental, highly layered.
Yeah.
They invite really close looking. Are there things that you are excited to, you're approaching the end of the residency here, and so time is of the essence. Are there any things that you're like wanting to finish up before?
I've been making, so I told you about the long piece. I'm going to mm-hmm. do one more of those.
Cool.
And those play off of like landscape wall coverings. All the work comes from wallpaper. So I did the two long landscape wall covering pieces mm-hmm. that have like a little reference to landscape. One is done and one I'm just started. We just poured today.
Cool.
And then I'm working on three really big ones that are 4 20 by 22 sheets tiled together. So I'm able to get a much bigger image than I would normally work with.
Yeah. Gets the tile mosaic element
yeah.
back into it.
Well, and I started thinking about, I knew that I wanted to do some kind of modular mm. piece because I knew that I wouldn't be able to just make some huge sheet of paper. And I was thinking like strips of wall covering, you know, the rolls,
yeah.
That kind of size. But then I was looking back at the history of wall coverings, and some early early English wall coverings were called domino papers. And they were single sheets that would be tiled together and hand painted, and people would cover their walls and they would cover wow. their cupboards and things with it.
Wow.
So that's when I ended up saying, okay, I'm just going to have them be almost like domino papers.
Yeah, kind of make your own shape wallpaper
yeah.
pattern.
But then I also was looking at this William Morris image. He's got this, I think it's a piece called Pomegranate, and it's a repeat, but it's four different images.
Mm-hmm.
that he repeats to make a larger, you know, that become the motif,
right,
that becomes the wall covering. But when you look at it initially, it doesn't look like they're four different images. They look like they're all the same. You have to look at it really closely before you realize that they are four different images.
Yeah.
So I've been playing with that in the big four panel ones.
Cool, like optical illusion.
Yeah, or just how, because wallpaper is really kind of deceptive and sneaky, mm-hmm, and it's all about kind of covering things and hiding that repeat, that point where it repeats,
right,
and I don't know. So it's a little bit like
the infinite pattern.
Yeah.
I love it. Let's see. So you're doing this residency now, and you're also a teacher at PCC, and you also have been doing the program Art Hour for the last year. Is that right?
Oh, I don't know. For, maybe, yeah, year and a half. Yeah, maybe something like that.
So that can you talk to us a little bit more about that? You go and invite people into galleries in Portland and vicinity, right, and talk about the exhibitions that they have up in depth.
So I worked in museum education a lot when I lived in New York, and one of the things that really struck me when I moved here was that there was a real disconnect between the art population and the rest of Portland.
Yeah.
And I was just shocked that people didn't know about Disjecta if they weren't an artist, or they didn't know about, they'd know about First Thursday and they'd know about the museum, and that was it.
Yeah.
They didn't know about anything else. And so this just seemed terrible to me.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to do something about it. I felt like, if you're going to have a thriving art community, you need lots of people, and they can't just be the art people,
right,
And I realized that part of why people don't go to galleries is because, one, they don't know how to access them. Two, they don't know how to behave in them or what's expected of them, mm-hmm, in there. And then three, they don't know how to talk about the work. So I started, actually, even before I did Art Hour, for 2 or 3 years, I worked through PCC's community ed program, and I taught this class called Exploring Contemporary Art Galleries in Portland, or something like that.
Yeah.
And I would take people around to the spaces and show them the spaces. And it was a lot of non-art people that would come to that. And I loved it because you'd get a scientist who never knew anything about art, but his wife made him come, and he'd be like, I don't know what any of this is. And then by the end of the class, he'd be like, I think the artist is dealing with blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
He would all of a sudden feel emboldened to participate, And that was totally my goal. So, we would go in and I'd be like, this is a checklist. Every gallery has a checklist, and it tells you the titles and the names and the prices. If you want, you don't have to buy anything. People don't know if they don't have any exposure to it at all.
Right.
So that's when I started doing it. And then because I got the PCC Rock Creek job on Saturdays, I teach painting on Saturdays, I couldn't do my class anymore. It just wasn't going to happen. So I just thought, I'm just going to run it on my own. And I started calling it Art Hour, and I just started advertising it to my circles. We go into the spaces, and really it's just about me helping people figure out that they know more than they think they do when they're looking at art, So I don't even tell them, I don't present myself as the expert on the content of the show sometimes I don't even know much about what the show deals with. I just kind of have a vague idea, but we'll just start looking at the work and saying, okay, what are we looking at? What do you notice? And let's just share what we notice.
Yeah.
And then people start sharing what they're looking at, what they see. And then out of that always bubbles up this more interpretive kind of commentary.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's like hive mind.
It sounds great. It sounds really fun. When is the next one?
I'm going to be doing one on, I want to say June 6th. Is that a Thursday? June 6th.
It is. It's first Thursday.
It's going to be out at PCC Rock Creek. Will Moss is curating a show. There are three artists involved. And my understanding is that it's kind of a show about how design and art come together. So it's some functional objects that are also straddling into the more the art non-functional realm, if that's
very interesting. And how can people find out more information about upcoming?
So I don't think they've officially announced it, but if you go to the Helzer Gallery's website, if you go to PCC's website, mm-hmm. so pcc.edu, and then you click on galleries, you'll be able to find the Helzer Gallery, and they will be announcing it. But basically, and we meet for an hour, and you know, my part of why I do it for an hour is I just feel like, okay, if we give this show an hour, like if we just give it a full hour, like what do we get from that? You know, like that's a lot to give a show an hour. I don't even think people who go see work a lot give shows an hour.
I can say anecdotal experience, the answer is no, they don't.
Yeah, you can get pretty deep into it if you give it an hour.
Yeah, and the people who show up, are there regulars who come to all?
I do have a few people who've come to a few. I'm getting mostly art people, so that's actually sad for me, even though I love the conversation. Like the conversation starts at a place where everyone sort of has the same background, so I have less questions like, why is this even art, you know? But I'm happy to answer that question, too. But yeah, it's a different animal than it was when I taught it through community ed, which is kind of a shame. I mean, I wish it was emerging. With community ed, we had artists I'd get, scientists I'd get, you know, all different kinds of people, retirees. Yeah. You know, I got a lot of, like, well, a handful of docents, which was funny, from the Portland Art Museum. Yeah.
You can never learn to laugh sometimes.
Yeah, I guess not.
I love that. This is a call to all of the listeners out there who don't identify as artists but feel really interested in Art Hour. Definitely look it up and maybe participate next week.
Yes. And actually, this is what I'll say about galleries, is that it's this free resource that we have in the city. And I think people think, oh, we're such an artsy city. But I don't, if we don't have people going to galleries like that, I don't know how we're an artsy city, you know? Like, we need people to come, even if you're not going to buy something. Or I just think that level of participation and involvement in the arts is really important.
It is.
And the galleries are like this amazing resource.
They are incredible. Open many days, most days a week, you can find some kind of free art to look at.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for saying that. I think that is a really important reminder to be getting, even if it's just every Tuesday at 11:30 a.m. when they're listening to Art Focus on KBOO.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, so the culmination of, or after all of the artists at the Pulp and Duckel C3 residency are finished up, is that it's going to go through the year? And then
my understanding is that there will be, I think January or February, they should have a group of exhibitions in C3's new location, which is down in the Pearl in the North Park blocks.
We're so excited about that move. And also Adams and Ullman Gallery also moving to the North Park blocks in the fall this year. So this is going to be a very exciting time for Northwest Pearl District adjacent galleries.
Yes.
And another invitation to everyone out there to come visit. So thank you so much, Amy. It's been really great talking with you. Look forward to seeing all of the outcome of your residency, and I'm loving all the behind-the-scenes footage that you're posting on Instagram. If you're interested in checking out Amy Bay's work right now, you can visit her website at amybay.com, and on Instagram at Amy M. Bay.
Yes. Thank you so much, Amanda.
Thank you.
It was fun.
This has been Amanda Clem for Art Focus on KBOO 90.7 FM Community Radio.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Transforming Hate, Mulugeta Sarah's Legacy, on Thursday, May 30th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center in Portland. 30 years ago, Mulugeta Sarah, an Ethiopian immigrant, was beaten to death by 3 white supremacists. This event will screen a short documentary about his life and death. Again, that's Transforming Hate, Mulugeta Sarah's Legacy, on Thursday, May 30th, from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the Interstate Firehouse Cultural Center, 5340 North Interstate Avenue in Portland. This event is part of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, taking place until June 5th. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. ¶¶
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oceans, Flamenco, and Vivo on Monday, June 3rd from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Milagro Theater in Portland. Flamenco artist Savannah Fuentes performs her latest work, Oceans, Flamenco, and Vivo. The water-themed presentations will feature singer-percussionist Jose Moreno and guitarist Pedro Cortez. Both musicians are third-generation Spanish flamenco artists and reside in New York City. Again, that's Oceans, Flamenco, and Vivo on Monday, June 3rd, from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Milagro Theater, 525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. This is an all-ages performance. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Así que vamos a delirar, deliremos por un ratito.
Buenas tardes, bienvenidas y bienvenidos a la programación en español. Esto es KBOO.